Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 20th, 2022. We broadcast live from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to tonight's scriptures. Let me change things on our desktop here. Okay, tonight's scripture is going to pick up where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John. Tonight we're going to be looking at John chapter 15, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 15. I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit he taketh away, and every branch that beareth fruit he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself except it abide in the vine, no more can ye except ye abide in me. Ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit, for without me ye can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered. And men gather them, and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. So shall ye be my disciples. As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. If ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments, and abide in his love. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. This is my commandment, that ye love one another, as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if ye do whatsoever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, and ordained you, that ye should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. These things I command you, that ye love one another. If the world hate you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. If ye were of the world would love his own. But because ye are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. If I had not come and spoken unto them, they had not had sin, but now they have no cloak for their sin. He that hateth me, hateth my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which none other man did, they had not had sin. But now have they both seen and hated, both me and my Father. But this cometh to pass, that the word might be fulfilled that is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. But when the Comforter is come, whom I will send unto you from the Father, even the Spirit of truth which proceedeth from the Father, he shall testify of me. And ye also shall bear witness, because ye have been with me from the beginning.
Okay. All right, tonight, do we have any questions? I guess we'll go there first. Questions mailed in there, John?
No, we do not have any questions, John, and no announcements.
Okay, no announcements. You made note to the meeting earlier today that some people show up for that meeting.
I have a report of the 7:30 meeting.
And okay, but you let them know that I was unable to make it today, right?
Yes. Yes, right. I did. We only met for about an hour.
Okay. If you get a chance, maybe drop the recording into the Skype and I'll listen and see.
Okay, can you set up, John, where you want that on the website? People are asking where to get it for the last
time. Oh, good question. Catch me tomorrow or something. We'll set a page up if we haven't already. I don't think we did.
No, I haven't.
We'll set a page in.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we have no questions mailed in and anything particular. Okay. I don't have a subject tonight. I was going to talk about Jefferson. I did do some work. I was able to get down to do some work on some research that I've done, working really out of a book. A great book. Anybody wants it, it's The Real Thomas Jefferson. Also got a book, The Real Benjamin Franklin and The Real George Washington. And this is put out by NCC, what is that, what are those initials there? Do you remember the NCCS, I think it is, .net? National, I'm looking in the book right now to see what that website is. National Center for Constitutional Studies, so it's nccs.net. And these books go very cheap. You know, they're really not much money at all. I think I bought these books for $5 a piece. If you buy them in sort of a set, you know, buy a couple at a time, you know, like Jefferson, Washington, Franklin, you can get them for about $5 a piece. And also got the Making of America, really great book. But anyway, this real John Thomas Jefferson is a book put together basically going into history and discovering who Jefferson was by going through his letters, the communications between himself and other founding fathers, and maybe congressional hearings or things going on, and letters between other people, interviews. I mean, it's really a powerful book, and it really reveals who Jefferson is. But anyway, I've been wanting for a couple of weeks now to talk about Jefferson. I'm not going to be able to do that tonight. I did go through, because I've been really so busy, to get my book published, Court Access and the Common Law. And I'm starting to work on a lot of our handbooks, which I'm going to put them into, you know, up there, in pocket handbooks we've got. Up on our website, you can get them all for free, you know, download them as a PDF, the Committee of Safety, how to build the Committee of Safety, the Pettigrew, the Grand Jury, and so on. I think there's about 6 or 7 of them. I'm going to put them up into pocket handbooks up on Amazon. I know the one I got up there right now is going for $5. I mean, I'd like to get it cheaper than that, but it is what it is, unless you're ordering thousands at a time, where we can sell them for 65 cents, which we had done before, because we bought like 10,000. But we don't have the money to do something like that, and nor do we have really the manpower and the time to be able to mail these things out. So, but anyway, anybody wants the handbooks, they'll be up there on Amazon. Matter of fact, I put together a page underneath the welcome tab, and you'll see books by John Duresh. And you've got government by consent with a link to purchase that. Actually, it's a link to another place on the website, gets into the details of that book. Court Access and the Common Law, I posted that up over the weekend. It's been published now. Anybody would like to get it, they can access it by coming here and clicking on this link. And let's see, click on a link, it should take you to Amazon where you can purchase the book. And here's the other book that's up there right now, Common Law Grand Jury. Now this book here, Court Access and the Common Law, It's 550 pages, but it's 8.5 by 11. It's a large book. I did it that size because I did a lot of forms. I've created numerous forms. We've also laid out, different motions and laid out how a motion should go. We wrote up a lot of motions, different motions that you would take through the process of a court case. But it's 550 pages. It's probably more pages, ultimately, or more material, ultimately, than my first book, which is Government by Consent. And that was, let me see how many pages that was. That was 894 pages, so it was 900 pages. So this book here is probably 900 pages, maybe even more. I got to change that 716. That's wrong. It's 550. But anyway, it's 550 pages, 8.5 by 11. So it's paper, paper size. A lot of great information, details on how to open a case, particularly a quarter bracket, what we use the process and procedure that's available to us. There's nothing wrong with that. The motions that go back and forth in a court case, which is the argument. And at some point in time, when that argument is done, then you're ready for the trial. So anyway, this book explains that, how a court case works, all the different papers you can file, a lot of different strategies. There's a tax strategy up here. There is a traffic court strategy up here. Habeas corpus, lots of information. So anyway, the book is available, and it's a hardcover book. I decided not to do this on a paperback because once you get this book, it's really meant to be read through once or twice, but really to use as a reference book when you're writing a case. That's what the book really is good for. Go through everything, checkpoints, make sure you're covering all of your bases when you're writing the paper, and so on. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to change my microphone and headset because this one I have right on right now, I've got this, sounds like I'm in a tunnel or something, at least to me talking, so give me a second to make a change here. Okay, testing 1, 2, am I coming through okay?
Sounds like you're way down the bottom of a bucket, John.
I didn't have my headset on when I said that. Am I coming through okay? Testing, 1, 2.
Yeah, you sound fine now.
Okay. All right, yeah, this new headset that I bought, it's way too uncomfortable. And it sounds, when I'm talking, like a hollow thing or something. I don't know. It's weird. Anyway. Okay. I'm going to double check. I'm pretty sure we hit the recording, but let me double check that. Okay. We did hit it on. Okay. Anyway, as I was saying, the book is now available, Court Access and the Common Law. I'm really excited about getting this book up there. So anybody that wants to purchase that book, it is available. I put it down pretty cheap. It's $55, but bear in mind it's a hardcover book. It's 550 pages, which is probably equal to about 1,000 pages or 900 pages or so, like the Government by Consent. And it's got a lot of valuable information. I know the course that we were pushing along, which is Jurisdictionary. That course runs for about $350. When I first took the course, I think that was the price, $350. And it was all PDF books. Everything was downloading online, and you downloaded all these PDFs, and you went through the course, you downloaded MP3s and all this stuff. But now I think he actually teaches this on the website in a different way. I'm not sure how it works, but in any event, it is a little expensive. But it was well worth the money from my perspective because I had to learn the process and how to write papers and how things worked. And I learned a lot on how things worked. The problem with that is he's civil law. Like any other lawyer, he's civil law. And and not common law. So you don't really get a common law perspective. And you also don't get a constitutional perspective. The book that I put together is purely constitutional perspective. It's all about common law. It works off the rules of common law, not the rules of the court that they have from the 1934 Rules Enabling Act, which is an assault upon the common law, upon our court system. It's destructive. But anyway, again, it is available. And as I mentioned, we do have one book. I was kind of surprised. I forgot I had put this up there. And that's Common Law Grand Jury Handbook. And I did order one because I had never ordered one to see what it looked like. And it looks pretty decent. It's a nice handbook. And I don't know where it's at right now. But anyway, it's a nice handbook. It's pretty decent. I forget how many pages it is. It's specifically written for grand juries and grand juries only. It's got to be about 30 or 40 pages. I wrote one for the petit juries, and both of these are available, by the way, for free. PDFs up on our website. All you got to do is go up to Start a Committee of Safety, come down to Handbooks and Tools, and if you click on that, you've got these books here. For instance, let's see, where's the grand jury? I know there's a grand jury up here, committee man, organizing, common law, officials, jurist handbooks. Oh, I don't have the grand jury handbook, don't I? I see the jurist handbook here. Okay, I guess I never put that up there. We'll put it up there. It's a really a good book. This one here, this petit jurist handbook, is very specifically for petit jurists. Okay, it was written for that case. Only, not for grand juries, just petit juries. So it focuses in on the petit jury. My original book, which really combined everything, sheriffs, jurors, and bailiffs, and even judges, combined it. But this is more in-depth, more specific, more focused, and so on. And if you haven't seen this one, people should go up and download and read it. I think it's a pretty powerful handbook. Actually, this is telling me it's a grand and petit jurist, so this is one I put together as both. But I did break them up. The new books will be divided, grand on one, petit on the other, and probably about the same amount of pages, about 30 pages, because I have a lot more information on the grand jury on the one side, and I got a lot more information on the petit jury on the other side. But I did break them up, and I guess that's what I have up here is just the one book. It's just the jurist handbook. I don't know that I'm going to leave this one up there once I put the other two up. But again, you can get these handbooks for free, download them in a PDF form, as you can see. But if you wanted a pocket handbook, something you can stick in your shirt pocket or your back pocket or something like that, they'll be available very, very soon. I'll be working on that this week to get those booklets up there. They're all written. It's just a matter of putting them into format and then uploading them and getting them up into Amazon. I'm presuming I'm going to be able to sell them for about $5 a piece. I don't know. I know they work off page numbers, but I know the grand jury I was able to sell for $5 each, and so probably all of them are going to be close to that. Probably about $5 a piece, maybe $6 if I have to. So all these books are going to eventually be available, and you will find them here. On the books by John DeRash underneath the welcome tab, as I mentioned. Matter of fact, I made a list of the books that I'm going to be posting right here. I'm going to do a book on Memorandums Common Law. I probably have about 40 or maybe even 50 memorandums. Got quite a few. And you'll find a lot of them in the book. You'll find certain ones in this book here, the new book I just posted up, Court Access and the Common Law. There were specific memorandums that I felt were very important for people to know and have, and they'll probably use them. Or they can at least take the knowledge out of those memorandums and use them however they want in their court case. But the best way to write a court case is really if you make a reference to a particular situation, maybe a law or something, and you give the conclusion in a sentence or two of that law and move on and keep everything very, very simple in your main paperwork, which is your pleadings. But you refer to the memorandum of law in order to expound and make the points and prove the fact that this is the truth, or the, you know, this is the law, and so on and so forth. But anyway, I'm going to put handbooks up here that are just going to be on memorandums. I'm also going to put up a Robert Rules of Order handbook up there for people who might want to have that handbook. I think that'll be a very valuable handbook. Again, I'm going to try to sell it for $5. It depends on the size, how many pages it turns out to be. But I've got quite a bit of information on Robert's Rules of Order. There's simplified Robert's Rules of Order, and then there's also information on the very much details. That book will be put up there soon. Founding Documents. I'm going to put a book up there on the Founding Documents. It'll be pretty much like a constitutional handbook, but it'll have more information. It'll refer to the Federalist Papers and probably a few other things other than just the Constitution, Bill of, which includes the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence. The Jury Administrative Handbook, I'm still working on. I haven't finished that yet. And I think I'm going to try to really press on getting that done very, very soon. And I'm going to get that up there also. It'll be available on us. All these booklets will always be available on our site for free, downloaded as a PDF. But again, if you want the convenience of a handbook to stick it in your pocket or something, you have the option to be able to buy those. I wrote a elected officials handbook. I'm not sure whether I ever uploaded to some of these handbooks onto our site yet, but they will be uploaded if they're not. But there's the elected officials handbook specifically for the individual that's running for office. There's the county sheriff handbook, again, very specific for the sheriff. I think that one's like 70 pages or something. If I recall, I think it was a pretty long book, I remember, in a PDF form. So, you know, it may be something like, if it's 70 pages, it's probably something like 150 pages in a handbook. So it'll be probably more, a little more money, and it'll be a little bigger than a handbook. But I'll try to compress it as small as I can so it's convenient to be able to, you know, carry it around. We have the Committee of Safety Committee Man Handbook, which is already up there in PDF form. I'll be updating that. As a matter of fact, all these handbooks, I'm going to go through them and I'll make some updates. What are the changes or corrections that need to be made in those handbooks? You know, as time goes on, sometimes you'll find that you have to adjust your position in different things because you miss something and you have a certain conclusion and now you change the conclusion. So you have to get correction. And that's just the way life is. From time to time, you have to receive that correction and make those changes accordingly. We also have a common law handbook that's up there, I think, already, but if not, it will be. And we have the County Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook, which is up there again. That's a PDF form, but again, I'm going to put that into a handbook. And again, that's going to be a little big. I did get a book recently called Shrunk and White. Have you ever heard of that, Jan? Shrunk, S-Strunk, S-T-R-U-N-K and White. It's really a book on the elements of style for writing. It's not a thick book at all, but it really gives a lot of information on punctuation and, you know, how to use commas and, you know, different things. So I just got this book. It's a nice book, and it looks like it's probably maybe, let me see if I can put this up against another book. Well, I guess it's the same size as the book that I've got, which is eight inches, I think, by 5.5. But it's very thin. I may have to make some of these booklets that kind of a size. But it is easy to carry around. I might be able to get the full handbook, though, because I think they said I can go up to like 600 pages or 500 pages on those handbooks. Would be quite thick, but at least if they're small, again, you'd be able to stick it in your shirt pocket or your back pocket or something like that. Handbooks are very convenient, so, you know, we'll make them available. But again, people will have access to all of this information, all of these books, totally for free on this page. Let's see, it will be start a committee of safety, come down to the tools. See, I think I had that up going here. Nope, that's not it. I guess I'll leave this page here and go over to it. Handbooks and tools. Okay, and so again, a lot of books out here, free PDF books, and again, I'm going to make as many of them handbooks as possible. Going back to Jefferson, I did speak about talking about Jefferson, and I mentioned I didn't have the time, but I did put a lot of information today together on Jefferson. I went through, as I mentioned a short while ago, the real Thomas Jefferson out of that book, and I think by next week I'll be able to, because I'm close to being prepared to be able to now put it together, but next week I'm going to talk a little bit about Jefferson. I'm probably going to spend about a half hour on it, because I think it's important for people to realize that there was fake news as bad as it is today way back then. And I'm going to make that point and show that point pretty clearly from history. Our nation has been assaulted from day one. As a matter of fact, our nation has been assaulted before we became a nation. The assault upon the colonies started very heavily in 1750 by the king, who set forth the Bar Association. And I believe the Bar Association became into being very specifically for the colonies. I could be wrong on that, but that's the perception I have. And so it's not like the Bar Association was in play back in Britain. They had already destroyed common law in Britain and were taking over the process into civil law courts. But there's still a struggle, and there's still a lot of remnants of common law, even in England. And I'm aware of those people over there battling also to try to get their common law into the courts. And sometimes they win, just like we do here. Sometimes we win. But the purpose of the Bar Association was created for the sole purpose to destroy America's judicial process and also our political process once we became a nation. The war, the Revolutionary War, never ended. It just went covert, that's all. It's been fought ever since. And political parties were created by the Bar Association for the sole purpose to destroy this nation. And I may cover some of that a little bit in from this book, The Real Thomas Jefferson. I think it kind of touches on that a little bit. And I'll try to expound on that when we look at Jefferson next week. And again, I'm pretty sure next week I should be able to bring that about. Okay, I don't have, other than that, I don't have a subject, so I guess, do we have anybody in the queue? Let me see if anybody's got into the queue. Okay, we've got one person in the queue. If anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's *6 and 1 to get into the queue, and if you came in on an app, there should be a little button there to get into the queue. So anybody's got a question or a comment, you can get into the queue now. And like I said, we only have one person in there right now. So we'll take that first person. Let's see. I know we got two. Okay, let's take our first person. It is Robbie. Robbie?
Yes, hi. It's Andrew Medium.
How you doing?
I sent you an email last week. It was marked urgent. And, I guess you have to be busy or you just ignored it or what. But anyway.
I didn't see it. What was it about?
I marked it urgent. But because I'm doing your process to the T on the habeas corpus, beginning with the challenge I already did and the default they already did. I knew they wouldn't. I filed writ to cease and desist and the writ of sale and seizure. You see, there's a problem when it comes to signing things. That's when now a court wants to start acting a fool. They just, you know, now they're concealing documents. I looked online the clerk's registry, and I see an order from the clerk saying notice of to filer, right, electronic case, state court records not included. Filer is instructed to file a notice, and then puts in parentheses with the state court records attached within 24 hours. Well, number one, there's no attachment on the court docket. like that, federal court document.
Okay, let me tell you what they're saying. They're treating this like a motion, okay? You did a habeas, we did a habeas corpus, or you did the habeas corpus?
I'm doing it right now.
Okay. Well, they're treating habeas corpus as a motion, okay? And that's what it sounds like. If you filed a habeas corpus, and now she says, oh, you have to have a notice of motion. The way we put it together is pretty much, it does notify the fact that it's a habeas corpus, but it stands on its own. I don't think a notice of motion is necessary for a habeas corpus. Because you're in a court case operating and you're filing it in that same court, you know, maybe it would be appropriate to put a cover page on it, which is just called a notice of motion. So the clerk is, on the one hand, I think, is operating properly and just making notice to you that you got to put a notice of motion. And so you put that cover page on top of that. It's just called a notice of motion.
And what's the notice of motion?
The problem is, though, you're going to a judge. Has the judge made any decisions in your case?
No, usually when it comes to, when you get to the part of signing things, that's when they want to conceal documents, not cooperate, and not do what you ask them to do. I mean, they filed everything up until time to sign something. Mm-hmm. Then they want to start acting up. And I'm going to the T, your process. We're up to now,
they don't want you in the court. You got to remember.
Huh?
You got to remember, they don't want you in their court. They don't like anyone coming into the court. They don't like anybody coming into the court without a lawyer because a lawyer plays ball. And people are rogue. They don't even know that they're supposed to play ball. So,
remember, I told you that's the reason that I avoid a particular federal court. I have a lot of experience with them on Broward Boulevard. It's very close to the state court. They're more prevalent in going out of their way to protect the constitutional violations, the treason acts of the state court.
What are you in right now that you filed these papers?
Well, it's within the district still because there's four or five courts in that same district.
In the federal district?
When I say district, the 11th Circuit.
It's not the federal court then?
Yeah, it is the federal court, exactly how I'm supposed to do it. But it's not on that, in that one, it's in Key West, but it's in that, Key West is part of that district.
Okay.
I just don't go to the one on Broward Boulevard, particularly, they're worse than even the rest of them, but it's still the same circuit. It's in the same, it's meaning they can't use that, they know I'm in the proper circuit, the 11th Circuit, so they're not using that.
And you're in Florida, if I recall, right?
Yeah, I told you about them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where my kids are being held captive. My grandkids that I have, you know, I tell you, custodial and power attorney over, they're being held captive there and they do what they want to do.
It gets a little confusing when you move from state to state, and it seems even on a federal level now, because I've never heard it called circuit courts before. In New York,
it's called
the federal district court, the district, northern district or southern district or so on.
Yeah, well, if you examine, because I have a lot of experience with federal courts, if you examine all federal courts, they have a circuit. In Texas.
So there's numerous courts in a particular district on different locations.
Right. They call it actually a circuit. But like in Texas, it's called the Ninth Circuit. In Florida, that particular region in Key West, Broward County, and also Palm Beach is called the 11th Circuit. The 11th Circuit court, when you go to the Court of Appeals, the Court of Appeals is over so many of the certain ones, states of the federal courts. In Georgia, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals is over Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. It's the 11th Circuit. When you get into other states, it's going to be another number of circuits.
Mm-hmm.
They call it circuit, but it's federal court.
Okay.
It's not,
I'm used to what they do in the Northeast here and the way it works. But go ahead.
Well, I'm from Connecticut originally, because I know you talk about Connecticut. I've been there all my life since I was like 4 years old. They have a different circuit. It's going to be, probably Connecticut and Massachusetts are somewhere in New England, you know, there's about 6 states in New England, you know. So it's going to have another number, but those courts, there's like going to be like five courts belonging to that same circuit. So you do have a choice of which one. It's never just one that you have to go to. You have a choice. As long as you stay in that circuit, if you can, all right, and they can't try to use that one against you. So I'm within the circuit, so that's not the problem. So I don't have to go to, let's say, the one of Broward. I try to avoid that one. They're worse than the rest of them, and the rest of them are bad.
If
you file there in the common law, let me explain, on Broward Boulevard, I'm going to tell you right now, they'll throw it out and immediately not care what you say and say state judges are absolutely immune, meaning we're living on a Nazi regime tyranny, and they're saying state judges do what they want. That's how they'll protect them there.
Well, that's why, you know, you're really not going to get much success. I mean, we do get success from time to time, and you can get success from time to time. But generally speaking, most of the time we don't get success because they are evil. They don't even follow their own rules. Forget about the law and the rules that they should be following. So even when you play by their rules, you fudge with them and change them and turn them around and make them do something else and whatever they want to do. So, but
yeah, I told them that in writing in the state court one time. I told them, you call yourself operating under Chapter 39. You don't even follow your own rules in Chapter 39.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't. Well, anyway, the key thing though is, you know, if you're going into court now, and you're going up against the establishment, which is what you're doing. You're going up against the establishment or big business. You know, then you know it's the same thing.
It's a business registered on that registry.
Status quo. And mm-hmm. you're not going to win on this side of devolution. There is a rarity. You can win, but it is extremely rare on this side. But, you know, filing a court case now and them kicking you out or beating you up as you go through, you know, you can really kind of stick in there and keep filing papers and keep things moving and keep it in motion. But at some point, the key thing is all these court cases can be reactivated once we get on the other side of devolution, because we've been doing a lot of unlawful things, and we shouldn't even have to be spending money to get into these courts.
I know. I mean, it has run me bankrupt because I have several cases I'm doing, and it's not like I don't know how. I know certain tricks of the trade, too. It's just, you know, they do what they want to do, and their attitude is like, make me. But since when does a clerk get to issue an order to a civilian, a private American civilian?
I don't know. Well, I'm surprised she's calling it an order, but what she's saying, is correct. That you know, you need a notice of motion on the page, on the front of the page. Basically, the way we file it, it's not necessarily so. The way we put it together, because there is no court case going on, in the sense that we file in a federal court against something that's going on at state level. So once you go, you move to federal court for cause, but we don't even do that because you don't have to. You're taking it into federal court for a habeas corpus, and so there is no notice of motion per se, but the filing of the habeas corpus in itself, the name habeas corpus in itself, means there's a motion, something happening in the court, you have to respond, and the front page says that you have so many days to respond. You have 3 days.
Well, I'm about to file the writ now of habeas corpus. I'm up to the sale and seizure. Either way, she hasn't, or neither one has signed, you know, and so I'm just saying, since it's your process, how do you want me to proceed?
Well, it's not my process. I mean, I did write the papers, but, you know, it's not my process. That's just the process of the court. A habeas corpus is a habeas corpus.
Your procedure because, I mean, you know, let's say if I'm doing something on my own, my words might be different, how I might address it.
Yeah, well, if you file the papers and they're asking for a notice of motion on top, then give them a notice of motion.
Well, where's that?
Well, a notice of motion, I don't know that I have one. Well, maybe I do have something on the website. Let me take a quick look. I don't recall that I do. I do have that in the book.
Are you sure she has the right to conceal the documents that she's doing
She's letting you know. She's letting you know that they need a notice of motion. She's interpreting it that way. I can't argue that case. You've got a case in that court already, and now you're filing a habeas corpus in the same court. Is that the case?
I follow your procedure.
Yeah, but do you have a case? Do you have a case in that court?
It's currently there now.
Okay.
Listen,
what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
because we're not connecting here. You have a case. You've been filing papers in that court on a particular case, and now you're filing a habeas corpus in the same case.
I'm about to, yes. I have the same one, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they're asking for a cover sheet. It's a notice of motion. That's what they're asking for, right?
I don't know. It didn't say cover sheet. It just said clerk notice to filer, electronic case, state court records not included. Filer instructed to file notice with state court records attached within 24 hours.
Okay, so you're moving a state court case into the federal court.
Remember, the same, like, exactly how you told me to proceed.
Okay. You don't move the case into federal court. What you do is you move the violation into federal court. And as a matter of fact,
let's start over. Okay. According to your instructions, which I have them and I know how to follow them very well. First, I did a jurisdictional challenge in state court. That was
right.
Ignored, which I knew it would. Did the default. Okay, they ignored that. Mm-hmm. Now I did the next step, removal for cause. Okay, that was ignored. All right, I filed a default on that.
This is very, very important that you follow the point that I'm trying to make here. You have a case in the state court. Whatever that case is about, the federal court cannot hear it. What they can hear is the fact that you're in jurisdictions unknown, you're being violated and denied due process. That's the key, okay, due process, which really focuses.
I know, it's in your paperwork.
Yes.
So
if you file, moving it for cause, you're only filing the fact that it's a violation of your due process rights, and there's other rights involved.
Right.
So you can build probably about at least three different violations in that. So now you're doing that, and your wherefore clause now has got to be very, very strong. And what you're looking for in the wherefore clause is, number one, because that jurisdiction is jurisdictions unknown.
I know.
Because that jurisdiction.
Remember, all that's jurisdictions in your paperwork.
Let me finish this because it's helpful for other people listening anyway. It's because when jurisdictions unknown, okay. Therefore, your right of due process is being violated. That court needs to shut down. Okay, so it needs to cease and desist. You need in your wherefore clause an order from the court, commanding them to cease and desist. And then you're also looking. You need to also go after them for a penalty, $10,000 per right or whatever it is that you want per individual. If there's a lawyer and a judge involved, then it's the two individuals. Maybe you got three violations.
Mm-hmm.
Violations of your rights, so that's $30,000 on each.
Yes,
so that's what's going to be on your wherefore clause if you're looking for that restitution in money, $10,000 per issue. I would put in real money, I go for $1,000 because real money, $1,000 in real money is a lot of money. Okay. Bear in mind, real money, $20 is an ounce of gold, so it's a lot of money. So if you go for $1,000 per violation in real money, so it's $3,000 for each individual. If there's two, that's $6,000 altogether. That's very clear in your wherefore clause what you're looking for and what you're expecting the judge to do. So you did that. I've done this now.
We're up to that. So now they're holding it. They got the documents and they're just holding them and not finding them.
Okay, when you move to a federal court, there is a cover sheet, and the cover sheet is a federal cover sheet.
I did that too.
And it should say that it's being moved for cause and give them.
John, I did all that.
Okay, so everything
exactly
right.
Yeah, I put out your instructions. I have them right on my computer, and I follow them very well. I have everything.
Okay, so everything is done right now. Now
yes.
They're violating you.
Yes, they are.
You can go to their boss, go up the line to their boss. You know, the appellate process there in the federal courts and demand that they, force them to obey the law.
All right. Do you have anything to that?
I don't have anything for that part of the process, no. No.
Lord have mercy.
Because right now you're probably not going to get anywhere that way either. But it's a very simple thing. I mean, you just want to write a one pager that you want to make a notice of motion in that court. You see, but you're not really in that court yet, are you? I mean, they didn't accept your papers, so there's nothing in the court.
Yes, they have them.
Then you can do. Goodness.
Well, I said they have them, but they haven't signed them. They're holding them there, like they have the upper hand and enjoying it.
Well, if they're filed, you'll see them on record. They don't have to sign nothing, but they have.
No, it's not filed. No, they're holding them and concealing them. They're there at the court, but are concealing that part. The only thing that you're going to see on the record is up to the ones that don't need the signature. Mm-hmm. Which is up to, the affidavit for default judgment. Mm-hmm. After that, the writ to cease and desist and the writ of sale and seizure is there, but they have, refusing to file it.
The next thing to do is a writ quo wanto, okay? And a writ quo wanto basically puts them on notice that they need to now let you know by what authority they act. You want their bond, they want their oath, and then you want to know by what process and what authority they're acting and doing what they're doing. And that's called a writ quo wanto. Now, writ quo wanto...
Yeah, I know what that is, but which one am I using? I know you have a few out there.
Yeah, look at the forms I have on the website. I need to update them. I just finished my book, and I'll try to get time to take and update all those forms. But they're still good. You just got to really sit down and think about it and put it together. There should be in the forms. I think I do. Do I have a writ quo wanto up there? I don't know if I do or not.
You have them on other parts of your site, not in your instructions for these documents. You don't have it in there. You have it in another part of your site.
Yeah, I'm looking for it now to see if I where I might have it. It might be under law.
Like I've seen one where
okay, court forms and process.
Yes, there's not one right there in that section that I'm following to the T.
Okay, I don't know that I have a writ quo wanto up here.
Not there, no.
You know, I have filed a writ quo wanto on the federal courts concerning the judiciary, and actually both the legislators and the judiciary, we filed a writ quo wanto. It went unanswered, so it just sits there because they're not going to answer it. They don't want to answer it, and they don't want to produce their bonds. They don't want to produce results. They may not even have taken.
Well, I told you often. I know. I told you the ones in Florida are operating without bonds. The reason why is because they know the people don't generally don't know they should have them because they're
right.
In that area.
When the people
number
don't
two,
know they do what they want. You're right. Yeah, I understand. That,
yeah,
they're lawbreakers.
Number two, the attorneys are certainly not going to force it. All right. And number three, under the Uniform Bonding Code. Because of the violations and too many crimes, especially in Florida, they commit on the people, they're not even bondable, even if they wanted to be, which they don't care to be. They just do what they want to do. But they don't, even if they wanted to be, under the Uniform Bonding Code, which controls them, okay, who can and cannot be bonded, they're not bondable because they commit too many crimes on the people.
Remember, I told you this last week or the week before. I'm pretty sure I told you last week that you make it to the point where you're just not going to be able to get anywhere, and you got to wait till you get to the other side of devolution. And the other side of devolution will be this year. There's no doubt in my mind about it.
Well, I hope so.
We're sitting here waiting for justice. We're casualties of war. We can't make them do the right thing.
I've known about 14 years. A warning about devolution. All right, he let me know he doesn't care to study the information I've given him. and somehow he's deceiving and believing that he's going to escape.
Can you say that again?
I sent some information concerning devolution through an attorney I've known about 14 years.
Oh, they don't know about that.
Yeah, and I gave him a warning, he's one that also argues against the Constitution, and when I try to make him see actual law, he'll even threaten me like he's not gonna read unless he's gonna get paid.
Look at the attorneys. The bar attorneys believe that the common law has been abrogated. Okay, some of them believe that common law is case law. Okay, they're very confused, mm-hmm. and a lot of them believe. Matter of fact, all of them I think believe we're under Roman law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Roman law is civil law. We are under Roman law because their courts are running according to civil law. Civil law is Roman law. Same thing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's Justinian law, Roman
martial law,
municipal law, or Babylonian law. Law is
Babylonian. Yeah.
But.
Well, they act like that too, though.
Well, of course, yes. They do whatever they please. They don't follow their own rule. We're up against
you. John, I've been, see, you don't know a lot about me. I've been around the block, boy, I'll tell you. A lot I can tell you myself.
Well,
learn a lot
experience.
From
you. You know, I got my book out. If you want, you can buy the book.
How much is your book?
Only $55.
But
listen,
you
it's
tell
a
me
hard.
What to do, or if you need to tell me where to go.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It lays out exactly what we're talking about right now. It talks about
but you need to tell me where to go from here while they're concealing the forms right now.
Well, if you go to the welcome page, our welcome tab, and come down to Books by John Darash, we'll find links where you can get the book. It's this book here.
No, but I need you to tell me where to go. I'm going to get your book. I am. But mm-hmm. you need to tell me where to go from here right now on this case, because they will sit there and hold it. I got that going on in about three federal courts.
If you go to the tab, Education Starts Here, come down to law, okay?
Yeah.
And the other tabs will open up, and you come to court forms and process. Now, that's one page that people are not going to be able to get to if they're not premium members. And a premium member is someone who's
getting $5. But I pay $5 a month. Yes. I'm a premium.
Then you'll be able to see this page. Anybody who's a premium member, which is $5 a month or more, you'll see this page.
But I need you to tell me what to file now to get a move on this.
I don't have anything up yet on a quo warranto. Your next step is...
Oh, my God.
A quo warranto is a powerful paper. I did a... how I put it. The quo warranto, I do have a copy of the quo warranto in my new book. I'll try to get it posted up, but I don't know whether I can get it up in a week or so. I'll try.
All right. So that's one I can use applicable to this case where they're concealing the
document? Well, I think that's your next step is a quo warranto because it puts them on notice.
Yeah.
They have to answer
right.
it. They won't answer it, but by law, they've got to answer it. They don't have a choice. And if they don't answer it, then your next step is to go to their boss. The boss is the appellate court, I guess you'd call it the appellate court going up to the next step.
Mm-hmm.
You're moving it to appellate court to appeal only for an issue. And your issue is, look, these people are not obeying the law. And I gave them a quo warranto, and they're still not obeying the law. I want this court to set forth an order, and you write the order up and attach it to your paperwork, too, when you're filing the papers. You tell them, I want this court to force the lower court to follow the law. And the law requires that they fulfill what is in the quo warranto. It also requires that they respond. And see what happens. I mean, I'm interested to find out how they respond to this. So I haven't gotten to that point yet.
If you can point me to the quo warranto then that you're mentioning, I really need to do this.
Again, I'll try to get it posted. I don't have a quo warranto up there right now. I do have one that we filed federal cases. Let me see. Hold on. Federal cases, action against the judiciary.
This is a federal case.
I'm telling you where you can find one that we filed, okay? If you go to the federal...
I have a few that you filed. I have about two of them.
The quo warranto?
Yeah, they're older. One is like, I think, 2015, something like that.
Okay, yeah, that's the one we filed. It was quite some time ago. We've learned a lot more since, and I've learned that this is, Four Wanto can be used a lot more than I realized, okay? But you'll find it right here. February 19th, we filed one in 2020, Writ Quo Wanto, concerning the Second Amendment. The cover page, it's the cover page that they want to see.
I saw that too. But I'm not dealing with the Second Amendment, though, with firearm right now, with weapons right now.
Hey, this Core Wanto, you can take and you can run through it and make it yours, okay? Just to take it and make it your case instead of the case that we have, that's all. You can add to it. You can be creative. Remember, we're free and independent. We can add to what we want and go through the process. And basically, it ends up being a demand for that they give you. I don't know that I really understood it as well back then. I did understand it to some degree. But it really, the power of the Quo Wanto is a paper that is a writ from the king, we the people, that they must obey. And basically, you're saying you're not obeying the law. And first of all, I want your oath, I want your bond, and those are the basic information they have to respond to. And then they have to respond to why they are, you know, breaking the law ultimately. So you got to be a little creative in writing that. I think the book that I just put up there is going to be a little more expressive in how that works, because the book was written for the purpose of teaching. This was written for the purpose of filing, so it's a different thing.
What about a mandamus, no?
Well, a mandamus is, you can use that in different ways. You can give them a writ of error. That's another writ.
I've done a few of those, and they were
too. Isn't as powerful as a Quo Wanto. Because a Quo Wanto means that if they don't respond, they become nothing. Do you understand? They're no longer a judge.
Right.
They have nothing. Okay. And that's the end result of a Quo Wanto if they fail to respond. Now, whether that's going to be applied is a whole different story. Now, remember, we're up against evil here.
I know. Yeah, they're basically possessed by Satan.
Okay, I got to move on.
So what page is that? I may have seen it once. Concerning the Second Amendment.
You go to federal cases. Are you watching my desktop?
No, but I'm on your desktop a lot. On your site a lot.
Okay, on the far right side tab, you go to federal cases, highlight federal cases, come down to action against the judiciary. You click on that. When you get to that page, you scroll down, and you'll see a list of filings. And you come down, you'll see it was filed February 19, 2020. It's in chronological order.
Oh,
it says, Writ Quo Wanto, Second Amendment. And this was one we filed.
I think I've seen it, but I don't remember right now where it is. But I'll go look this evening.
We also have an IRS Writ Quo Wanto. I forgot that I even filed that.
I saw that.
So we've got a couple of them up there that you can look at. And again, you know, we're learning just like anyone else. And, you know, I've learned in the School of Hard Knocks, we have to figure it out and get it wrong and try it again and get it wrong and get it right again and finally get it right. And, you know, and
I'm not really too used to writing Quo Wantos, not really. I've written other types, but not that type.
Yeah, I think the book is the most clearest on the Writ Quo Wanto, and detailed and written.
All right. And how much is the book?
Written in a way that it's generic, so that you can get out there and do it, whatever you fill in your own points and stuff.
All right. And how much is your book? $55. And is it out now?
Yeah, it's a hardcover book. It's out now. It's $55. It's 550 pages. It's 8.5 by 11, so it's a full-size book, so it's the size of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it that big for the sole purpose of, because I did a lot of forms in there, and motion, okay, lots of motions, and laying out the chronological process of how it works, you know, and starts.
I know Carl Miller has one out there too, but it's very generic. He's Oronto, Carl Miller.
Also, what's his name? What's the other guy's name? Gerard, what's that other guy's name? We've called him up numerous times. He plays around with the king's hat, and when he does his, goodness, why can't I think of his name?
His is written pretty simple, Carl Miller. It's very simple.
Anyway, there's a couple examples there you can work off. And again, you can go to get the book. If you go under the Welcome tab, come down to Books by John Duresh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Second book. First book is Government by Consent. The second book is Court Access and the Common Law. Click on Order the Book, and you go to Amazon. And here you are. You can click on the book itself at Amazon. It's $55. It's
yeah,
a
I have an Amazon
book.
Account.
Okay, it's a hardcover book.
I made this
a hard, which costs a little more. I made this a hardcover book because it's a reference book, and it's going to be, and if you're going to use it, anybody that's going to be going to court, you're going to use it as a reference. I would use. Yeah. I'm going to use this my own book. I will be using it because you know, well, I have lots of stuff that I reference too, and it's in my computer, but. You know, I go through the list, make sure everything is covered, that I've covered every point. It's got a lot of checkpoints, bullet points and checkpoints all the way through. You know, it got mindset. I got a really good write-up on the IRS and dealing with the IRS. The most important part of that is the memorandum I wrote on the IRS and the DATF. I wrote memorandums on both of those, which is meant to be put into the case against the IRS if you're battling the IRS. I laid out the strategies on how to deal with the IRS and the best way to focus. You got to be the plaintiff. If they get you in court before you do, then you have to countersue them. But the first order of business is to move into federal court for cause. You see, when you'll be in a federal court and you will write a paper and say that you're in jurisdictions unknown, because they don't even know. U.S. 26 doesn't even have a jurisdiction. There is no jurisdiction.
Right, that's right. Felony. Yeah, it's null and void. Congress is not authorized to do that.
So you're in a federal court that's rented out by a private company called ultimately the Federal Reserve, because they're the IRS is an election agency, and they're the ones coming out after you for the Federal Reserve.
Right.
So the Federal Reserve, rents out the in any federal building, every federal courthouse. They have a courtroom which they use for that purpose. They rent it out, and they rent the judge. So it looks like you're in a federal court. Looks like there's a federal judge, and there is, and you are, but you're not. And the whole thing is a fraud.
Yeah.
So the first order of business,
court, I think it's called.
Right? The first order of business is to challenge jurisdiction and move it to federal court for cause to challenge that jurisdiction because they don't have it. And they're going to say. First of all, the lawyer is not going to understand that because he doesn't know this. He's going to say, "What's wrong with these people? We're already in federal court." He doesn't know that you're not. Okay.
The judge
knows. He gets a stipend and he gets a bonus. First of all, he gets a paycheck for running the case. It could be 40, 50 grand. I did see some numbers, something like that. And then if he wins the case, he gets a bonus of $30,000 or something like that. Okay, so
that's all of them. They make about $18 across the bench. I have a document called Breach of Constitutional Contract that I throw that in their face, that all of them make money across the bench to do what they do.
Yeah, it's a conflict of interest. They're stealing from you. And, but anyway, that's where you want to go with that.
You say it's on Amazon, and it's called what? It's called Access and what?
Court Access and the Common Law. You can get a link right from our website.
All right, and you say that's best to get the Coronto out of there?
Well, yeah, because that's my latest and my most updated information on writing a paper like that. I've written numerous Coronto's. I think I've written maybe three of them in the past. Since I put this book together, I've researched some more. I got more information. I'm more focused and directed on the purpose of the Coronto. In the past, it's something that I would never suggest to people to use, but now I see the power of the writ Coronto. It's a very powerful paper.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, I just have to get used to using it. I never really used them much. I think I may have dealt with one, so I have to get more acclimated.
But it's one of the instruments of the power of the king. And remember, we're sovereign. We're kings of our own domain,
Yes, I understand.
We're all kings.
Yeah, that's what kingdom means, king of the domain, king of your domain.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'll look for that and get that right away because I can't let the paperwork just sit there because I knew they were going to do that. When it comes to signing things, that's when they start acting up. And then another judge, same thing. He's concealing a document, won't file it. He's holding it in his chambers probably.
Mm-hmm.
and it's threatened the court not to file it.
Well, again, you know, that's where you want to appeal to his boss. It's going up to the appellate, you know, and on a situation, on an open case, you want to go up there and let it be known these people are not obeying the law.
Make them obey
the law, you know. Yeah, but you're probably going to get the same thing from them too, because remember they all rub shoulders and they're all playing the same.
Yeah, they always side with the lower court, the appellate court. I'm familiar from experience.
By laying the process at now, when we get to the other side of justice, where justice returns, you know, it's something that's already there to be able to resurrect and deal with at that point, you know.
Right. All right, well, I'll get it, and I'm going to let you know that I purchased it next time.
All right. Okay, we're going to move on. Thanks a lot for the call. Let me...
All right,
thanks.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to go over to... Gerard, I'm going to pass things over to you now in a minute. I'm going to introduce Brent. Brent, are you here? Brent?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
He looks to be here.
Yep.
Yeah, his mic is off now. He's muted. Gerard, you want to take the mic as soon as I pass things to Brent?
Can you hear me? I don't know if my stuff is working. Can you hear me?
Fortunately, we can hear you.
You're lucky. I've been here struggling. Okay, yeah, I got everything set up.
All right. Brent, are you here? Calling Brent.
Okay.
All right, what we might want to do is go back to the queue and after each question check in to see if we can find Brent, and then we can pass things to him for a while and then come back. So, okay, I'll pass it over to you. There's people in the queue, so you should be able to just hit the next... And be careful. I get confused with this board. I kicked everyone out last week.
Well, that happens.
I pulled a Gerard.
That's become a John now. You've done it so many times. Okay.
All you got to do is hit that next question, and you'll get the next person. Last call for Brent before we move over. Brent? He probably walked away from his computer for a while. Oh, there he is. I think he's unmuted.
Yeah, he's unmuted, but I don't hear him yet.
Oh, he's freshening his drink up.
I don't hear him either. Make sure your mic's plugged in. Maybe your mic isn't plugged in.
No, I'm here, John.
Oh, there you go.
out of the sky comes Brent.
You were just playing with me, right?
No, as soon as you said, Brent, are you here? It just went away. I don't know why, but yeah.
It's the poltergeist.
Yes, those guys, whoever they are. And they're out there, the Menahunis, they call them in Hawaii. And gremlins, isn't that?
That's the word I was looking for, yes.
Gremlins, right.
Well, they're all over my house.
That's a technical term in radio, isn't it?
Gremlin?
Yeah, gremlins, probably.
Okay, I'm going to pass the board over to Gerard. Gerard, you got the board. And Brent, this is Brent Allen Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And I am... making a couple observations this evening. One of them, it just came to me. Sometimes ideas come to me, observations, I put things together finally that I maybe should have put together years ago, but I got to thinking today about reading newspapers. Of course, people don't read newspapers like they used to because of the internet, but I remember I had a cousin. Well, I still got a cousin. I go to his house. And he was first cousin once removed. And he had newspapers all around the house. And he showed me how to, when I was a boy, how to lay the newspaper down on the floor so he could open it up and look at the different pages, which I had never done before. I grew up in a home where there were no newspapers. Nobody cared about newspapers. We didn't get any newspapers. And I had never been in the habit of reading a newspaper. That was my first introduction to what a newspaper was. I'd heard about them. But at his house, they got lots of newspapers. One from Terre Haute, Indiana, and the Casey Daily, and I don't know what else, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And everybody in the family read them every day. And I've known other people since then who were in families where everybody read the newspaper. And we never did. And people used to say to me, why don't you read the newspaper? And I'd say because it was never a habit that I ever got into, because I grew up in a home and a place where we didn't get any newspapers. And I'd talk to people that grew up in the Nebraska Panhandle way back in the 1920s, and they religiously read their newspaper. One lady told me that their newspapers they got back in the 20s were a week late, and the Denver paper would take a week to get from Denver to their remote location. But they read it every day. And as I grew older, I began to see that people that read newspapers religiously were in touch. They knew what was going on with everything and everybody. But then I began to notice, too, that the people that didn't weren't any further behind and usually were further ahead. I mean, in life. And I got to thinking, well, is reading the newspaper a waste of time? Well, let me just tell you, I don't know how it is where you're from, but my experience is people that read newspapers religiously are addicted to those darn things, and they're addicted to whatever the newspaper wants to tell them. And I've discovered also that through the years that they were hardcore Democrats. The people that I knew that didn't read the newspaper and didn't really care were not Democrats. They were not left-wing wackos. They were not followers, even in the early days, the people I knew that grew up with Roosevelt and worshiping the man. One family I knew, not to mention names, they might find out I said this, but they had a picture of Roosevelt hanging on the wall in the house, and it was as though he were a god, and they read the newspaper every day. And I see it now even among so-called conservative people. They're addicted to Fox News. I don't watch Fox News. I've seen Fox News. I don't watch CNN either. Don't do any of those things. And I get on the radio with my friend Roger, and he said, Brent, I know that you don't keep up with the news, but here's what's happening. And I say, well, tell me what's happening. He'd tell me. And then he'd want to know what my opinion was, because he'd give his, and then I'd give mine. And it doesn't take long. Once you read the headlines of the newspaper, after a while, you just know what's going to be next. You know what the outcome is. You know why the people in politics started the war or the hassle or said there was some. I just heard today. I didn't know it was real, because I don't read the papers and I don't listen to the news. I just heard today somebody sent me a joke through the media, a picture of the Monkees, the singing group from back in 1966, and they all had little dots on their faces, and it said something, the name of the group was the Monkees, for you folk that aren't old enough to remember. They were right after the Beatles, and the caption said, until I saw their face, I didn't believe in the monkeypox. The monkeypox, but until I saw their face, now I'm a believer. Well, that was a famous song that they were known for singing, and when I saw her face, now I'm a believer. I do remember hearing that on the radio back then. But does it really make any difference if they say there's a monkeypox or isn't a monkeypox or a COVID or isn't the COVID? The power of the left is that you pay attention to them. And those that are wrapped into the evil empire, that are captured by the evil empire, will listen to the news. They'll be addicted to the news. And I've known conservative people that are addicted to the feeling of outrage. They're addicted to the feeling of outrage. And I've discovered in time that even though they're outraged, they're not going to take one minute to make any move to do anything about any of it. It's those that aren't controlled by the media
that will stand fast against the media. And those that are addicted to the media will continue to be addicted and will not stand fast. They'll scream and holler and grumble and growl and then go along with them. That's been my observation to various degrees. Well, as I'd said, things never change. The evil empire, the MO of it, is always the same. Now, I read a fellow not long ago, and this is from Appendix 36 of 150 appendices. Appendix 36 of the winterized version of the winterized translation of the Bible. I call it the Good Book Uncooked, and I have appendices in the back. And I compiled this over the years, and it's about the French Revolution. The reason it fascinated me is that the blood was running in the streets ankle deep in the gutters when they were chopping people's heads off, not to mention shooting them. It was bad. And I went through and I got the policies, the fundamental policies of the sodomites that ran the French government. They were sodomites. They sodomized each other. They were filth. They took a hooker off the streets of Paris, stripped her naked, and enthroned her. She paraded down the streets naked, and then right up to the steps of Notre Dame Cathedral, they opened the doors and brought her inside and seated her on a giant throne they'd erected in the cathedral and called her the goddess of reason and logic. And they said, "This is our God, our goddess." And their motto was, we're going to strangle the last king with the guts of the last priest. Well, what they did was, their policy and how they pulled it off isn't any different today than that's what I discovered. Let me go read through some of these things they did. They promoted, number one, myth, again from Appendix 36 of the Good Book Uncooked. Presumptive sillies among the intellectual class, so-called, still speak of the French Revolution as romantic, but 300,000 men and women and children were publicly executed by firing squads, 40,000 by guillotine. Now, 300,000 is a lot, but 40,000 is a lot, too, to chop that many heads off. That's a lot of gallons of blood, and it all ran out. That's why I said that when they were doing that, it filled the gutters and the streets ankle deep. Now, it is the model of all revolutions, including the one that the useful idiots of the evil empire and the evil one himself are trying to foment here in America as I speak. The French Revolution remains the prototype for communist, socialist, and Marxist revolutions. It is the prototype. They study it. I knew a gal from, she married an American. She grew up in Russia. She's about my age. And she told me some really unusual stories. Said that she had a copy of Lenin's. Lenin was one of the leaders of the revolution, a Jewish fellow. The Bolshevik movement was a Jewish movement in Russia. And it's a movement still that way, not called Bolshevik. They change the labels and the names constantly to keep people confused. That's one of the marks of the revolutionary effort to bring evil and domination and bloodshed is to change the names constantly. You know, first it was COVID, before that, I don't know, second was COVID. What was it before that? Just constantly changed. Now it's the monkeypox. Before that, it was the chicken flu. After the chicken flu, it was the one they had back in the 90s or thereafter. 2005, I don't remember. It's always the same thing. It's just a lie. The other thing that the French Revolution is known for is it had a deliberate design organized by those in the shadows, behind the scenes. Now, these are observations of historians. I just looked the stuff up best I could. So there's always people behind the scenes that are actually have the money and running things. I see that here. We saw it back in the late 60s and early 70s, too, when students were burning down the campuses, when people were being bused down to Alabama to participate in the marches, ostensibly to reestablish the rights of black people. That was a lie. I saw a flyer, had a friend, deceased now. Sure, her mother was so-called progressive, and she wanted her to go down there back at that time when Martin Luther King was very active. I don't stand in judgment on him. I don't know, but I do believe, no question, that that he was used by forces more evil than himself by far. He was used by forces more evil than himself. Was he evil? I don't know. Never knew the man. But I know that the things that happened were evil. I was going to tell you about this girl. Her mother was a little bit nutty that way and wanted her to go down there and participate. She thought it was a very moral and good thing to do. And so great buses came around to pick up young people all through our part of the country. And they passed out flyers. Do we forget these things? They passed out flyers so young people would want to come. And on the flyers it said, you'll have all the, you have a place to stay, food to eat, all the drugs and sex you want from any race. That's what it said. Send your children down here. We will corrupt them to the nth degree. Now, that's not a racist comment. I'm just saying that's what the flyers said. That's what they said. There are evil forces, as in all revolutionary efforts, behind all that. And do we forget this quick? Tools. The tools of revolution are disinformation, the theater. In revolutionary France, there were no movies back in the late 1700s, but the theater and the stage actors and the propaganda, the subversion of language and words, malice, class envy, hatred, jealousy, mass murder, which I'd mentioned, and foreign military action. They did all that back then, back during the French Revolution. Disenchantment and degeneration. Pornography during the French Revolution emerged from its caves and circulated openly in the civilized, so-called civilized France. Way back then, they didn't have photographs, but they had paintings and statues. Roman priests lost their faith along with the congregations. They all went down the tubes. They didn't stand fast. Of course, the priests were threatened with murder, too. Strange cults appeared, including sex rituals, black magic, and Satanism. Does that sound like America? That's not funny. What do you do? Cry or laugh? News media. The press was the spearhead. The French journals were mixtures of politics and smut. They admired agitators extravagantly and never discussed the church without mention of scandal, or the government without mention of criticism. Then in France, they never discussed the church without mention of scandal, or the government without mention of criticism. They relied heavily on tales of sin in high places and high-handed outrages of the court. Hello, boys and girls. All these things. I don't read the news, don't listen to it, but I can't help but hear that this is exactly what's going on in America. No name, however, highly placed and illustrious, escaped the scandalous accusations. There was a debt crisis in France. This arose from France's involvement in the American War against Britain. Remember, the Americans came to our aid in our fight against Britain. But because of that, it threw France into deep, deep debt. And that was used as a crisis to say, you've got to give us control to do anything we want. There was high inflation sidelined from recovery. King Louis XVI began his reign wisely. He dismissed the large number of corrupt and incompetent ministers inherited from the court of his father, Louis XV. and appointed an excellent economist, N. Robert Jacques Turgot, as Controller General. Turgot proposed drastic solutions to France's crisis. Listen to this. The cancellation of tax privileges for the nobles, the abolition of industrial monopolies, removal of restrictions on free enterprise, and other bold practical measures. However, the nobles pressured Louis XVI to dismiss Turgot. The government had to admit, then, bankruptcy. He was bringing it out of bankruptcy. Things were looking up. When Trump was in, economy was looking up. Right now, we're under the heaviest inflation we've been under in 40 years. 40 years. The Estates General consisted of three houses. The first estate was the clergy, the second estate was the nobles, and the third estate were merchants and the common people. The National Assembly, that's in France, the National Assembly. The commoners in the third house, that is the people, organized themselves as a safe, contained National Assembly. Have you heard that word thrown around recently? National Assembly? Oh, it's out there, big time. The shadow government of the National Assembly. Very popular in America. I stay in constant communication with all of them. Is it a good idea? Well, that was one of the tools of the French revolutionaries. The liberal, let's see what it says about, or what I have said here, I suppose. The nobles were outraged and convinced that convinced Louis XVI to send troops to blockade the hall where the assembly planned to meet. They were trying to replace the government with their own assembly. The liberals. The National Assembly spent most of its time debating the latest philosophical and political theories. It's a waste of time, friends. There is no theory of politics. There's just what God has established, and it's very good. The laws of nature, unwritten, in the creation around us, meant to be observed, unwritten. That's our common law, due process, how things are supposed to work. And the laws of nature's God written. There it is. A reason, remember, and logic are enthroned in the evil empire, held up as the way to truth. They aren't. They never have been. They never will be. What's the way to truth? Evidence and fact. Evidence and fact. You read the New Testament. Read it carefully, just slowly. Concentrate, relax, but concentrate. You'll discover that evidence is everything to what God wants us to do. We are to do nothing but on the basis of good evidence. The word faith in the New Testament means trust the evidence. That's what Jesus Christ said. These didn't trust the evidence. These did. That's what the word means, pistis, translated faith. It means to trust the evidence. Apistis means distrust of the evidence, denial of the evidence. The liberals, the fanatics, the most fanatical extremists gravitated to Maximilien Robespierre, a devotee of the writings of radical philosopher Jean Jacques Rousseau and Voltaire. Rousseau wrote, and this is a quote, "It is necessary to have a cohesive force to organize and coordinate the movements of society's members." Rousseau advocated constant agitation for equality in order to maintain an atmosphere of fear, an atmosphere of fear where individual differences will not be tolerated. Inspired by the defiance of the assembly and stirred up by revolutionary pamphlets and speeches, mobs began to roam the streets of Paris, attacking and murdering officials. Rousseau, our whole American education public school system is based upon the writings of Jacques-Jean Rousseau. Rousseau. It's incredible, I forget who said this, that this man, who is wholly uneducated, married to a woman a couple of decades older than him, produced 5 children through that relationship, turned every one of his children over to fondling homes. He didn't have time for them. And it's on his writings that John Dewey, called the father of American education, socialist and atheist, the founder of the idea of the teacher's college in America, of which there are now hundreds. Yeah. We're doing this all over again. Coordinated chaos by controlled opposition. Controlled opposition is a hallmark of revolutionary administration. Food shortages and hunger. Agitators panned out across the countryside of France to destroy the grain stores and terrorize the inhabitants. I used to do commercials for a food supply company, and they're the largest in the United States that do what they do. I was on a short wave doing the commercials, but they produce organic free grain and meat and salmon and all other kind of household stuff. It's organic free. They ship all over the United States. They've got over 100 trucks running. They ship to Alaska and Malaysia. I mean, all over. They've expanded beyond the states. Their headquarters was burned down not too many months ago. Burned down, clearly arsonist. Same thing that happened in France. And what was there, 20, 30, 40 other headquarters of food distributors burned down at that time here in America? The powers of government then collapsed. Everything fell apart with astonishing coordination. I have a picture right in front of me here. Somebody sent to me off the internet. A picture of the Long Beach Harbor. I used to live there. I used to be there. It was a giant military installation, giant naval shipyard, Marine Corps base there at Long Beach. Now, then, ding-dong, what's his name? Obama bin Laden, or the guy that was in the White House, the Arab, he turned it over to the Chinese, I think. And then, what's his name? Old DJ, Donnie, he took it and turned it over to the Aussies. And he didn't think the communists ought to have control of it. We got a picture here, not thousands, not hundreds of thousands, no, millions of containers. That's no longer a military installation. It's private now. It's huge. And a picture above it of, as far as the eye can see on the horizon of the ocean outside of Long Beach Harbor, 100 giant merchant ships waiting at anchor, hoping they'll be admitted into the Long Beach Harbor. Oh, what is that? That's orchestrated. Food shortages, hunger, burning of stores of grain, etc. Well, I've been through a dozen of these characteristics. I've got a total of 37 listed here. We'll save those for the next time. Again, this is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Join us for our law classes. Taught several now, and they're all available because we've recorded them, audio and visual. Right now we're teaching a class on how to draft a common law asset protection trust. You can go to commonlawyer.com and join us. My comments here are my own. And the leadership of NLA is kind enough to allow me a few minutes to say a few words. Back to probably Gerard. You there, Gerard? Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Okay. We have a couple of people in the queue. I'm going to hit next question. It looks like, I'm not going to say, because sometimes it goes from the bottom, sometimes it goes from the top. Sometimes it doesn't go at all.
Hello.
Hey, there you go.
There we go. I see some little green dots now.
Okay, that's you.
All right. Hey, I got a couple questions, just quick ones. First one is there a good email to contact you guys? The lady before had mentioned that her email you know, went through without being caught. And I had one over a week ago as well. So what is a good email? Could you guys kind of enlighten us on that?
Well, that's a loaded question.
It depends on what you wanted to send. If you want to send a question in, we've got questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. General information to get to our leadership, because all of our leadership gets mail from mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org, including myself. So if you wanted to talk something to me or to Gerard should be getting it too. And whoever, you know, responds to it. If you're specifically directing it towards an individual, they should pick up on it and respond to you.
Okay.
But be careful. Look at some people have taken the emails and put them onto chats, and we get filled with all this garbage and stuff. And I don't want to really call it garbage, but it's something that we're not interested in. We don't have time for it. Our questions is for questions. Our mail is for mail, for specific purposes, to talk to someone about something. And when you put us into a conversational chat thing and you put it out to 30, 40 people, and those 30, 40 people respond, and we get all this mail. So please, if you put us on that list, remove us, and don't put us on that kind of list. We get enough junk mail as it is. We just don't need no more mail that we can't, you know, consume.
Oh, I hear you.
Anyway, those are the two major mails.
Okay.
Send things to.
Okay. So part two of that question
it's a good idea to come on here and let us know if you got something really important.
Yeah, this is the best place to communicate to me and Gerard, because I'm overloaded and Gerard is too.
So. It's very easy to miss emails when you get, you know, 100 of them or 200 of them.
Oh, you bet. Oh, I know. Been there, done that.
It's hard. Yep.
So I sent out an email in regards to district leadership. Do I need to resend it, or will somebody go see if they can find it?
What was the email about?
Last week you were looking for district leadership people.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that should have went to Jan, J-A-N, at nationallibertyalliance.org.
Oh, okay. I sent it to mail.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't pick up one. I didn't see it. Jan, did you see it?
No,
I can re-forward it to Jan.
Yeah, just send it to Jan. You send him your basic information. He'll get you on a list. We're going to be meeting next Monday at 7:30. And that's a good time for me to make an announcement on that. Anybody interested in working on a national level here with us, we need national leaders. We'll be meeting next Monday at 7:30 in this room right here. And we should hopefully have the list at that point of what the duties will be for those positions. It's for district leaders. We have 10 districts, and we need a couple of district leaders in each district. So anyway, anybody interested in working with us on those things, we'd appreciate it, the help.
Okay. And then my second question was on your website, on the Start a Committee of Safety page, down toward the bottom where the resources are, the PowerPoint seems to be a broken link. I can't seem to get that to come up. So I was just wondering if you guys could fix that so we could get a hold of that.
Yeah, let me take a look at that. You're under Starter Committee of Safety, probably Handbook and Tools. Is that where you're at?
I think so.
Instruction documents.
To your resources.
Memorandums. Okay. Yeah, I don't see PowerPoints on this page. I do recall creating.
It's organizing. Organizing your county COS.
Okay,
page.
Let's get there. Then
organize. All the way down to the bottom where the resources are. And there's resource videos and stuff, and I think they all work. The only one that I couldn't get to work was the PowerPoint, so I was just wondering if we could get that fixed.
Yeah, I'm still not finding it. Underneath Starter Committee of Safety, right? Underneath that tab.
The very top one.
Oh, start here to organize a PCOS. Okay.
Now go down to the bottom. Keep going. Okay, whoa, back up just a little bit.
Here's PowerPoints here.
Yeah, it's right underneath the PowerPoint down there where it says PowerPoint. That link down there doesn't work.
It's here.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you know, I don't know what went wrong here. I'll have to check on that.
Okay.
So.
That was all I had. I'd like to use that PowerPoint, so I was just wondering if we could get it fixed so we could see what it is.
Okay. Yeah, this PowerPoint is probably a PowerPoint on introducing the Committee of Safety. And you'll also find it in video form for people who want to just put the video. It's a PowerPoint video, and so they can play that. And then after that, answer questions. And we don't have to know all the answers. We can just say we don't know the answers, but we'll get back to you next meeting. And then you come to us on Monday night and bring that question up, and we'll discover the answer for you.
Okay. Perfect. That's all I had, guys. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Gerard?
I said, okay, next question. It looks like, is it Veronica? Somebody got unmuted. Or they disappeared. I hit next question.
Let me take a look. I'll see if I can see. Yeah, Veronica
can
has
the mic. Can
you hear? There she goes.
There you go.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I had clicked on the unmute, and I clicked on the mute. Sorry about that. Okay. In listening to what was going on tonight, excuse me, and I was on the earlier call, and I had brought some things up, and I was just wondering, because it seems like what's being talked about really goes back to taxation without representation, and what Brett was talking about, that's right there in Pawns in the Game, in the third chapter of Pawns in the Game by William Guy Carr, 1958 book. But as it goes with taxation without representation is where we are now. We're back to where we began, and of course this, you know, dissolving the political bands and assuming amongst the powers of Europe the separate and equal station to which we're entitled, and declaring the causes which impel us to the separation. Well, over the years, as you know, I just have been in my personal walk, you know, collecting a lot of historical information and so on and so forth because of where I'm coming from with me, you know. And every one of us has got a path in life, and, you know, this is just mine. And when it comes to taxation without representation and knowing about the French Revolution and Reign of Terror is what is, you know, basically the key words for that is Reign of Terror and taxation without representation for us not having someone to go to in government to do the right thing, especially the judicial system. And over the years, I have collected a preponderance of evidence about the who, what, when, where, how, that we've been returned to this feudalistic system of corporate governance that we're in now. And I was wondering if you and Gerard and, you know, the people on the call would be interested in putting together a grand jury investigation. I could present the evidence, and you can take it where you want.
And this is up against who?
This is up against who? This is just for the benefit of the people. So that
we can talk about the grand jury potential.
The grand jury potential, I mean, I would like it to be, you know, for my particular issues that I'm dealing with here. On the other hand, though,
let me share a thought on that. And I was going to talk about this evening, and I didn't. And now that you brought it up, I'm being pushed to talk about it. I guess I should. I don't mean this in a bad way or in even a joking matter. I'm very serious. Anybody that wants to go to jail, get together yourself a grand jury and go poke the bear, because there's a good chance with today's environment, especially the way they're coming out after the Patriots, you're going to have a problem. We do have some people that belong to NLA, and they formed their own grand jury. I asked them not to. They did it anyway. I said, you have to be educated first. I know you're well educated. That's not part of the problem with you, though.
Yeah,
you have to be educated. And so you have to have that proper education. And you shouldn't be part of it. You know, you should be acting as an administrator.
Absolutely.
Bring the grand jury together and let them form together and do what you got to do. But look at one of the dangers we saw, and this happened in the very beginning when we started doing these grand juries, we misunderstood how to go forward. We tried to start creating grand juries in counties and in states, starting off with the states and in counties. And as we were putting that together, we came to realize that, wait a second, hold it. We can't just form grand juries everywhere, and they can't be there forever. They got to change. People have to constantly revolve, and a grand jury, generally speaking, shouldn't sit any more than maybe a month or three, depending on how busy they are. You know, if the grand jury is only called once every week or two, then maybe they'd be on call for 3 months. If they're in a busy place like New York City, they'd need numerous grand juries, and you'll be busy all week, so no one should have to sit longer than a week. Unless, of course, you're stuck with a case that takes a while longer than a week to get out, whatever the case may be on that. Same thing with juries, but particularly grand juries. Now, here's the problem. People are angry. I'm angry. And some people can't control themselves. I think I can control myself. So I don't let my anger take control of me. I still come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. Mercy is always considered on everything we do. But what we did is we realized that we can't go about forming grand juries all over the place, and we have a lot of people who don't know what they're doing, a lot of people acting out of revenge or anger, and it's just going to be chaotic, it's going to be problematic, and eventually people will end up in jail. So what we did is we formed what was called the Unified Grand Juries of each state, and then each state came together to form the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Now, remember, there is power in numbers. There's protection in numbers. And that's one of the key points about what we're doing. And we're being very careful. We're not going after any specific cases or just any cases. We're only going after subversion. Okay? We're going after the federal judiciary for subversion. We're going after judges for subversion. And the judges that we're going after for, particularly on the state level or county level or town level or whatever the case may be, is really, we've chosen only a couple of kinds of cases where people are losing their homes, non-judicial foreclosures, which is unlawful, okay? We work with those. We're working with habeas corpuses. And we're trying to not to really deal with much more than that. We're helping people with being stuck in traffic court and getting to jurisdictions unknown, but don't want to really get too involved with that. Now, here's my point on my problem, or my concern. If you're going to get a grand jury going, you want to start an administration for the grand jury, and that's what we're building, administrations in every county. Four individuals and actually a fifth wheel, because we need a paralegal working with the administrators. And that paralegal should be a backup administrator also. So there's actually five administrators. We got the number four, the idea of a number four, from the Magna Carta. You know, if a problem comes up, four of the individuals would go out, seek to deal with the problem. If they couldn't fix the problem, they'd come back and talk to the 25, and the whole 25 would get together and decide what they were going to do. And generally speaking, indictment is in focus. But, you know, we saw what happened with the king. You know, they went out to solve a problem. But in any event, what we're trying to build is a protection around the people. We don't want to see people going to jail. And with today's environment, that is potentially going to happen because they're looking for people to put in jail. Look what they did with this January 6th thing. They set the whole thing up. And they're going beyond that. They're going after people. So, what we need to do is build our committees of safety, get the support of the people. So you need at least 30 or 40 people at the point working together, solving problems, dealing with their local governments specifically. But the key part of this, okay, ultimately is connecting with the sheriff. We do want to make sure that we put ourselves together with a charter, resolutions, and a seal, and put everything together and then approach the sheriff. The sheriff should be educated prior to that. We should prime the sheriff with a book, Government by Consent. First meeting with the sheriff should be 5 minutes, no more than that. You let him know, I just want to come in, talk for 5 minutes. You introduce yourself. You give him a copy of your charter, copy of a resolution. See if he's gotten the book. If he hasn't gotten the book, make sure he gets the book. And then set another meeting 30 days later. okay, at, you know, preferably at the meeting place where everyone can be there. This gives the sheriff time to digest the paperwork that you've given him, seeing who you are, what you're doing, because you're putting together a charter, and you're filing that charter with the clerk, and you're going to have a seal on it, and you're going to serve it to anyone that you want to work with, you know, and all the local governments. So you'll start off with the sheriff. So once you have the sheriff on board, okay, and then you have you have the committee of safety, people working in the community, and then you have the administrators who then are now responsible for calling forth the grand jury and even the trial jury, and to orientate them. We need to take it away from the lawyers, because right now, I know in New York we have commissioners of jurors. That's what we have. And these people are all lawyers. They're all civil, and they pollute the juries. And it's time for we the people to take that back. So it has to be non-connected in office or with the bar association. Now, with that, you have safety. You've got a sheriff with you. You've got a group of people working. You're talking to local governments, and you're building things up. Now, the other part of this, and to overstep that whole process right now would be very dangerous. To overstep that process, or that process working as you develop and work as administrators, is okay. Would be okay once we get on the other side of devolution, because once we get on the other side of devolution, we're poised right now, ready to file our papers in the court concerning this problem with the juries and the pollution of the juries, and how they violated the juries, and how they've overtaken the juries and moved them, made them civil juries, statutory juries, And they're improper. You know, these bar attorneys that are prosecutors are not permitted to talk to the jury. The bar attorney, if they have a case that they want to bring forward before a grand jury, they need to bring it to the sheriff, because only the sheriff and the coroner should be able to talk to the grand jury. The people can talk to the grand jury on a civil matter, maybe, or maybe there's a few things. But generally speaking, the problems could be solved by the people coming in and talking to the administrators, and the administrators acting as the representatives of the grand jury with the sense of investigation. They can make contact to the local government wherever they're having a problem and try to correct that problem. And if they can't correct it, then they can pose that before the grand jury for the grand jury's consideration of correcting that problem. And so there'll be a process, and we have a handbook that we're putting together for this purpose to explain all of these procedures and processes. But there's safety in doing it this way. If once we get into the federal court and we take back the jury system in the federal court, then it's a slam dunk all the way down through the states, because this is an unalienable right of the people to be free and independent jurists, to be unpolluted and uncontrolled, not controlled by any of these bar attorneys or anybody, as a matter of fact. Okay, these ham sandwich juries, it should not be. And it's an insult to that joke that these lawyers tell or other people tell, because to them it's a joke, and to us it's seriousness. So I would say be very cautious. I'd say hang in there until we get to the other side of devolution. And if you form a grand jury, if you form a committee of safety, you get the sheriff going on your side. Remember, the sheriff has the power at that point to call the jury. And if he's educated properly enough, well, he could walk into the court, and he'll know how to, and we can help him orientate. But, you know, if he's educated, then this book should educate him. He'll be able to inform the grand jury. We have a book on informing the grand jury, which is the grand jury handbook. We have a book on the jurist for the petit jury also. Those booklets actually is the orientation for those jurists. So if we do it properly, bring that education down. And even if you don't have, you know, we haven't gotten to the other side goodness, I slipped my mind here. What's the word I'm looking for, Gerard?
Devolution.
Thank you. Yeah. If we don't get to the other side of devolution, but you do have a grand jury, you do have a committee of safety going, and you have a sheriff, you can bring your case to the sheriff, and if the sheriff sees the crime, he's got the duty, and he's got now the understanding, which is the backbone, to be able to go to the court and say, hey, I want to speak with the jury, grand jury. When's the next time they're going to be hearing? And they'll be informed of that date and time, and he'll put a slot in to come talk to them. And he can't be, you know, prevented from doing so. I mean, he should arrest anybody that interferes and with justice ultimately. So that's the way I would go about doing. Get your committee of safety going. Get your sheriff on board. Educate them, and then see if he's powerful enough, educational wise, at the point in time, or maybe a little later. Or when we get to the other side of devolution and we file the papers and win in federal court and then press down into the states. But eventually we have to get four individuals that will act as the administrators for the juries in order to orientate the juries and prepare them and make sure that they don't get tainted.
John, I appreciate everything that you're saying, and I've heard it all before. It wasn't about me. What I'm bringing forward is, you know, you do a good job at chomping at the branches and the twigs and the trunk of the tree, but you're not getting to the root, in my opinion. Okay, I'm looking at the roots, and what I was bringing forward is with the research I've done and everything, going that takes us back to taxation without representation, and what they were going through back then and so on and so forth may wake a lot of people up and say, yes, we really do have a reason for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's all I'm saying. And it's going to be up to the jury to decide. And what I'm talking about is the teaching part.
Veronica.
Okay? Got it?
Listen, Veronica, you want to be under the auspices of the court, which means you want the grand jury to meet in the courthouse.
Eventually, yes, but I want them to know why they're there.
No, I'm telling you, I'd like to agree with you. Listen to me, I really would like to agree with you, okay? I really would.
I know you would.
If you go forward with this, you're in danger, okay? You're poking the bear and you have no protection and you have nothing really solid. And they make stuff up. Your voice will not be heard. They will come down with
it. Like, I'm well aware of that. That's why I'm saying what I'm saying. I'm well aware of that.
National Liberty Alliance, who brought together the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, is only hearing, the only thing we're hearing right now is cases that are dealing with subversion. We're going after the judiciary, the federal judiciary, for subversion. And we've been filing a lot of papers for the sole purpose of building that case. And we've been filing.
Exactly. And that's the kind of stuff that I want to bring forward.
If you have a case that you want to bring forward. And
it's not about my case. My case is definitely, you know, along those lines. And it's in Commonwealth Court here in Pennsylvania now.
Okay. What exactly are you looking to do? Call a grand jury together?
No. I'm just putting it out there as a teaching mechanism, because a lot of people don't realize that this goes back to the beginning. States. The word states meant nobility in the 1785 dictionary. That's 2 years before the 1787 Con. So that preamble pretty much reads, and I'm just paraphrasing: "We, the people of the united nobility, in order to form a more perfect union for ourselves and our posterity." And when you look at the word for posterity, you think of esquires, and esquires are the younger sons of noblemen forever. That was a contemporaneous exposition of the wording that was used in that time. And the of America is only mentioned three times in that con.
Change the word state to something else?
States meant nobility. His 1828 dictionary still has it, or had it, as nobility.
That's fine. I understand. Look, there's a lot of pollution in those dictionaries, too. I can show you a lot in Black's Law. But, you know, the
problem. Well, yes, and that's the law that they were working with, is the wording. And that day, at that time, that was a contract.
But listen, the problem with it is this. Let's take Black's Law, because Black's Law, I've done a lot of looking into and researching. There are 51 jurisdictions, and you have to understand what jurisdiction you're thinking or talking about. Okay, when you look at when you're looking into Black's Law and you're reading some of this stuff, and I know that there have been some changes here or there, but the bottom line, the states what our founding fathers, which I think were very educated people and understood and knew what they were talking about, you know, they created the states, which was the colonies. Each colony became the state, and the state is a government that is sovereign, a sovereign government. Of course, it's eclipsed sovereignty, but it's a sovereign government. With the authority to act as a government with a state, you know, as a state. Now we have, of course, the federal government, which we've given certain authority to, and we've collected ourselves as the United States. I don't see how you can change the word states. Now, we the people, of course...
I didn't change it. That's the way it was written.
The Constitution just says that it's the states, the United States, we the people.
That's right, and the word states meant nobility.
Okay, so you're saying that the Constitution is a problem and we have to get rid of the words because it's about nobility and not about the governments, the 50 governments?
Well, they breached their own contract with the people when they took silver out of the coin and they, you know, instituted the 16th and the 17th Amendment. They breached Article 1, Section 9 and Article 1, Section 3
even though
of their Constitution with the people. That's their contract with the people, so it's contract law.
Well, first of all, we're looking at compacts and not contracts. And second of all, look at the people themselves are the ones that are ordained and established. That's the hierarchy right there. And the states, from the perspective of our founding fathers, of course, was a, you know, a government, a individual government, a sovereign government. And each one of the colonies had that sovereignty about them.
In the 1787 newspapers, when it was published in Pennsylvania and in some of the other colonies, it was we, comma, the people. And yet, on the one that's in the archives, of course, is that typeset that is very, very definitive of someone's private trust or corporation.
I don't see that argument. I really don't see it. I see.
I'm not arguing. What I'm saying is these things are facts, and there are people, you know, who may understand that a lot in a different way than you do, John.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just don't see things that way. You know, the Federalist, they, matter of fact, the Federalist today, if you listen to someone like Judge Napolitano, for instance, he's a Federalist. And if you listen to him talk, he says, well, the Constitution should have really said we the states and not we the people. Well, that's a Federalist position, not a Republican position, certainly not the position that our founding fathers came up and concluded. So there's a lot of people who have a lot of thoughts or arguments, mm-hmm. little things in the Constitution here or there. I think the Constitution is fine exactly the way it is. I think it means exactly what it says. We the people ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. It's united governments. Every one of these states is a government onto its own. They're sovereign. They have total control of what goes on in that state. But they have to, of course, be obedient to the law of the land, which is the U.S. Constitution, ultimately. They're all framed and formed the very same way the federal government is framed and formed. You know, there are three powers, and they have authorities. They can write law. The authority of what law they can write is given in the Constitution. A lot of state constitutions have violated that, and they write laws that they don't have the power or authority to write. It's a violation of the United States Constitution, and it needs to be corrected. But you see, it's not the states that went rogue per se, but it is the evil people who have taken control of the controls of the states that have taken it rogue. We need to bring it back. Everything, the structure of the United States is still there. The government, everything we need is still there. We just got to get rid of the evil and clean up the mess with, for instance, the Republic Review, okay?
The ambiguities.
Huh? You're right.
Have to clean up the ambiguities, and that's where I'm going with this, the ambiguities.
You want
to... In that Constitution.
You want to get a case before a grand jury now, or someone wants to get a case, or I don't understand.
No, I'm just kind of putting it out there, if you want.
I say... You know, want to get out there and poke the bear. I'm not saying that people would be wrong doing this, but they better have the right intention. They better get educated. They need to understand what they're doing. They need to be able to inform the grand jury. They first have to be informed well enough to understand these booklets we put together should inform them. The books that I've written should inform them. But the thing is they have to be informed. The juries have to be informed. And if that is proper and the process, and you need to find a way to get under into the auspices of the courts. Under the auspices of the court. You want to get into the court building. So, yes, you can operate outside, you know, sort of in a tent, so to speak. You know, got to be careful. But, you know, because, you know, it's a de facto system or de facto, well, de facto court, really, that they're operating in and not permitting courts of law to be operating in there. But the thing is, you may end up in jail with this. That's what you got to be careful of.
Listen. There's a lot of things going on right now that we don't even have a handle on, but yet organically is coming together. There's a group that is getting all the sheriffs together to protect the voting. They're gonna make sure all the sheriffs are there and on board. I mean, this is not even connected on. This has to do with Bannon and a bunch of those people with True the Vote and all that. They are going to empower the sheriffs, make sure the sheriffs are there, and they're going to get the sheriffs to honor their oath and watch the machines and arrest and do whatever they have to do to make sure that the vote is good. Now, that is going to be a good thing as far as putting us back on track by empowering the sheriffs and empowering the people. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to see us getting back to that law, to the way it's supposed to be. And nobody's going to believe that anybody's a king, or that it was for them and their heirs as nobility. You know, we the people are the nobility. We are sovereign, and I don't think that Americans even have that idea anymore. Maybe when our forefathers run around, they were warm and fuzzy with the king, but people today are not. You know, so I think it's gonna take a natural turn in the right direction as long as we're educating people of what it all means, and it's all out there. All you got to do is look at the documents. It's
absolutely
not, you know what I mean.
Hey, listen, I just got a call. We got to go over to that radio program now. So
late. We're already 10 minutes late.
Hey, we can pick this up more if you want next week, Veronica. I appreciate what you're saying. I'm just saying to people, be careful, and you better organize well.
Exactly. Yes.
All the paperwork right. But I'll tell you what, by the time you do all that, we will be on the other side of devolution, and we will be in the courts on the federal level to take back our courts to make sure that the people take control of bringing these juries together. People who are not political animals and people who are not controlled. Bar attorneys are controlled. Bar judges, most all judges, if not all of them, are controlled. And that's a major problem. And look at, common law belongs to the people. It's the operations of the people. Okay?
We
have to operate under the auspices of the court. And we have to operate with honor, justice, and mercy. And we have to do things proper and recognize the processes of the court and the power and the authorities of the certain officers, particularly the sheriff and the coroner.
Absolutely. They're addicted to the Federal Reserve note or codependent on it. So it's an addiction problem as well. So that, I just want to throw that in. There's
that's on its way out, along with
the timing is right. I agree with Gerard. Okay. Yeah,
we're blessed.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. We've got to end this because we've got to get onto the radio. So,
yeah, we'll.
By the way, if anybody wants to listen in, if you're in the area, this is coming out of Woodstock. It's 104.1. Let me double-check that. 104.1 on the FM dial coming out of Woodstock, and it goes out at a 200-mile radius. So you can figure out how far you are from Woodstock if you want to get into this radio station and listen and tune in. It's not a station that broadcasts over the internet. It only goes out through regular radio waves in the airwaves. Okay, you got anything final, Gerard, or we're going to close down?
We're going to skedaddle.
Okay. All right, well, Godspeed, everyone. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Thanks for coming, and take it to pick it back up next week. Good night.
Okay, good night.